content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Anna Dean Silver from the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Out in the Garden. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the book Month by Month Gardening in the Carolinas by Bob Polomsky. And we start today with the introduction portion of the book. And it says, Welcome to Gardening in the Carolinas. Whether you are new to gardening or new to in the Carolinas or new to gardening in the Carolinas, you will quickly discover that success depends on knowing how to do certain tasks and when to do them. Creating a flower bed that draws admiring looks from passerby, complementing the look and style of your home with well-placed trees, shrubs, and ground cover, and brightening your indoor living area with the colorful blooms and enchanting fragrances of indoor plants does not happen by chance. You can be assured that they were achieved with careful planning, know-how, and proper care. Carolina's month-by-month gardening helps you achieve these goals, guiding you throughout the year. Each month, follow the calendar format to remind you when it's time to for certain garden and landscape tasks. Every season in the Carolinas presents a gardening opportunity. Start vegetables in the summer for a fall garden. Divide and replant fall flowering perennials in the spring when their new growth emerges. Start or renovate a warm season lawn in late spring and early summer. Just know how and when each task should be done makes gardening easier and more fun, and greatly improves your chances of success. 10 categories of plants are described in this book. Each chapter takes you month by month through the year with reminders and step-by-step approaches that sharpen your gardening skills. With the help of several seasoned gardeners from both North Carolina and South Carolina, I have attempted to place each activity into its appropriate month for both states. However, some fine-tuning will be necessary in your own garden and landscape. The seasons do not always arrive when they are expected, and most landscapes have microclimates within them. And our next topic is gardening in the Carolinas, geography and climate. North and South Carolina share a 400-mile stretch of coastline. A band of sand, the Carolina Sandhills, runs through the midsection of both states, and in the west rise two mountain ranges, the Blue Ridge and the Great Smokies. These divide the Carolinas into three district gardening areas, each with prevailing climates and soils, coastal plain, Piedmont, and mountains. In this book, I use these terms when special advice applies to these distinct areas. The coastal plain extends westward from the coast, gradually rising to the Piedmont. The soils of the coastal plain range from well-drained loamy sands near the coast to the coarse textured sands of the Carolina Sandhills, which were once sand dunes comprising a prehistoric shoreline during the Ice Age. The Carolina Sandhills vary in width from 5 to 30 miles and extend from Rockingham and Pinehurst in North Carolina southward through Aiken, South Carolina, and into Georgia. The mild winters across the coastal plain are offset by the suffocating heat and humidity of its long summers. However, summer's wrath is tempered along coastal areas, which enjoy lower temperatures than inland areas thanks to welcome sea breezes. The climate along the coast north of Cape Hatteras is suitable for growing plants adapted to cool northern areas. By contrast, from Baldhead Island, North Carolina, through South Carolina, the coastal climate is subtropical. The Piedmont lies between the coastal plain and the mountains. This plateau of rolling hills is comprised largely of heavy red clay soils that color a gardener's tools, clothing, and carpeting. These poorly drained soils can dry to concrete hardness in midsummer and become wet and sloppy hog wallows in late winter. Fortunately, organic matter incorporated into these clay soils can convert them into a respectable growing medium. Summers in the Piedmont are also hot and humid, with correspondingly high nighttime temperatures. Winter is shorter than in the mountains and seldom colder than 10 degrees Fahrenheit. Snowfall averages less than a foot per year across the Piedmont, often covering the ground for a short period of time before melting. In the mountains, the highest peaks, over 6,000 feet, are in North Carolina. Soils range from excellent loams in bottomland and coves to shallow, rocky soil over bedrock at the higher elevations. Although the large differences in elevation result in large variations in climate, meteorologists claim that North Carolina has the greatest variety of climate of any state east of the Rocky Mountains. Cold-tolerant plants can be established here more successfully than elsewhere in the Carolinas. The mountains are the coolest region of the Carolinas throughout the year. Winters are colder, but often interrupted by warm days, especially in the lower valleys. In the higher valleys of the North Carolina mountains and at elevations above 3,500 feet, temperatures may drop, albeit infrequently, to 0 degrees Fahrenheit. In summer, hot, humid days give way to cool night temperatures that offer respites to plants and gardeners alike. Autumn is the driest season in the Carolinas, with October and November being the driest months. Most rain falls during July and August. However, during most summers in the Carolinas, a certain amount of drought occurs, sometimes quite severe. Tropical storms and hurricanes pose a threat to the Carolinas usually between August and October. For climate and weather information specific to your locality, contact your county cooperative extension service office. And our next topic is general gardening practices, building healthy soil. Gardeners often get caught up in the beauty of their plants without remembering that the foundation for any healthy garden, landscape, or lawn is soil. Good soil allows air, water, and nutrients to be absorbed by plant roots and lets those roots roam freely. How do you build healthy soil? Begin with a soil test through your local Cooperative Extension Service Center. The test will tell you the pH level of the soil and the levels of nutrients available for plant growth. Stated in numbers, pH is a measurement of the acidity or alkalinity of the soil. On a scale of 0 to 14, a pH of 7 is neutral. Numbers below 7 indicate acid conditions, and readings above 7 are basic or alkaline. Soil pH affects not only plant health, but also the availability of nutrients. If the soil is too acidic or too alkaline, minerals such as nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, calcium, and magnesium can be tied up and unavailable to your plants. Adding more fertilizer will not help. The soil pH will have to be corrected by mixing in the recommended amount of limestone to raise the pH or sweeten the soil, or adding sulfur if you need to lower the soil pH. Maintaining the right soil pH is very important. It affects the uptake of nutrients by plants and creates an environment that supports helpful soil-dwelling organisms, including earthworms. The results of your soil test will indicate the amount of limestone or sulfur required to bring the soil pH into an ideal range between 5.8 and 6.5 for most vegetable and flower gardens, shrubs, trees, and lawns. Mix pulverized or pelletized limestone into the top 6 inches of soil to raise the pH. Mix in sulfur to lower it. The soil test also measures the levels of phosphorus, potassium, calcium, and magnesium. Because calcium and phosphorus move slowly in the soil, these minerals should be incorporated into the top 6 inches of soil. Knowing what nutrients are already present will save you money. If your test shows your soil already has high levels of phosphorus and potassium, there's no need to add a fertilizer containing these two nutrients. Good gardeners also add organic material which improves soil tilth, its physical condition of structure or structure. When added to clay soil, organic material holds the clay particles apart, improving air and water movement in the soil. This translates to deeper and more extensive root development by our plants. The kind of organic matter you mix into your soil is your choice. My grandfather liked to use rabbit and chicken manure for his vegetable and flower beds. My mother used fish in her rose garden. As a child, I buried fish heads, tails, and other inedible parts around her roses. If you are squeamish about using these organic materials, then add compost or shredded leaves. Cover crops or green manure, such as crimson clover or annual rye, are relatively inexpensive sources of organic matter. Sow these crops in the fall and then turn them under in the spring to enrich the soil. Organic fertilizers derived from naturally occurring sources are a good alternative to synthetic plant foods. They include composted animal manure, cottonseed meal, and blood meal, among many others. Although they contain relatively low concentrations of actual nutrients compared to synthetic fertilizers, they increase the organic matter content in the soil and improve soil structure. To avoid damaging soil structure, never dig or cultivate when the soil is too wet or too dry. Follow this simple test. If the soil sticks to your shovel, the soil is too wet. Postpone digging until the soil dries out. Coarse, textured, sandy soils have excellent drainage but hold little water. Add organic matter to them to increase fertility and water retention. Important note, sand has often been touted as the perfect fix for improving drainage in clay soils. Unless you add it at the rate of at least 6 inches of sand per 8 inches of soil, your soil will be better suited for making bricks than growing plants. Sand will not fix clay soils. Organic matter will. And the next little topic is planting. Plant properly. The health and long-term survival of plants that you set into their new home, indoors or out, is affected by how they're planted. Follow the how-to instructions in the book to learn about proper planting. Your plant's survival is counting on it. Assessing light levels is our next topic. We all know that in order to thrive, plants need light. It can get confusing, though, when you're looking at plant labels or reading a gardening book and see references to terms that seem vague or unfamiliar. In order to select appropriate plants for your landscape, right plant, right place, you should assess the light levels in different parts of your garden and landscape. The following terms are used to describe degrees of light. Full sun is an area that receives at least 6 or more uninterrupted hours of sun each day. This light exposure is well suited for fruiting vegetables, roses, fruits, and a wide range of flowering plants. If you're new to the South, not from around here, you'll quickly discover that plants growing in full sun in cooler regions of the Northeast, for example, may need some afternoon shade in their warmer region, in our warmer region. The next degree of light is part sun or part shade. Refers to those areas that receive direct sun for 2 to 6 hours a day, but not more than 6 hours of uninterrupted sun at a time in a given location. This location may receive dappled shade throughout the day. This light level will accommodate a wide variety of plants. And the next degree of light is light shade, sometimes called high shade, is an area beneath tall deciduous trees or pines that receives little or no direct sun, only reflected light. And the last one is full, dense, or deep shade. This receives no direct sunlight and little reflected light. It can be complete shade from a building, such as the north side of your house, or very dense shade cast by the canopy of a southern magnolia whose evergreen foliage is so thick that it never allows any sunlight to reach the ground. Our next topic is watering. Anyone can water. However, watering efficiently to meet the demands of the plant while conserving water requires some attention to detail. Each monthly chapter in this book provides information on when and how often to water. The aim is to avoid the common mistakes of overwatering or underwatering, two practices that can injure or kill plants. Water needs depend on the plant and the situation. Moisture-loving plants require more frequent watering than plants adapted to dry conditions. Newly set out plants need to be watered after planting and during their establishment period. Once they become established, however, they may not require supplemental watering even during the hot, dry summer months. Some shrubs and trees are quite drought-tolerant and can withstand long periods without rain or irrigation. Soil also affects watering. Plants growing in clay soils need to be watered less often than plants growing in sandy soils because sandy soils drain so rapidly. Whether you water with a garden hose or an automatic below-ground irrigation system, water wisely. Refer to the water sections in each month for information on watering efficiently. And our next topic is fertilizing. Fertilizing could be gardening practice that causes the greatest confusion. Besides knowing when, how often, and how much to fertilize, the choices seem endless. Should you choose a fast or slow-release nitrogen fertilizer? Would your plants prefer a diet of organic or inorganic nutrients? What do those numbers on the bag mean? Should you choose the 10-10-10 or the 16-4-8 dry or liquid food fertilizer? Before making an application, realize that fertilizing should be guided by soil test results, the appearance of the plants, and the purpose of fertilizing them before making an application. Fertilizers are minerals added when the soil does not supply enough of these nutrients. The three most important nutrients, nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, are represented by three numbers on a fertilizer bag. For example, 16-4-8 gives the percent of weight by nitrogen, phosphate, and potash. In this case, nitrogen makes up 16% of the total weight. Phosphate, which supplies phosphorus, accounts for 4%, and potash, a source of potassium, makes up 8%. The remaining weight, the total must add up to 100%, is comprised of a nutrient carrier. A fertilizer containing all three nutrients, such as a 16-4-8, is referred to as a complete fertilizer. If soil tests indicate high levels of phosphorus and potassium, then apply only an incomplete fertilizer, one that supplies only nitrogen, such as 21-0-0. In addition to the primary elements, NPK, the fertilizer may contain secondary plant nutrients, including calcium, magnesium, and sulfur, or minor nutrients such as magnesium, zinc, copper, iron, molybdenum, and apply these nutrients if dictated by soil test results. You can choose dry or liquid fertilizers. Dry fertilizers are applied to the ground around your plants. They are available in fast or slow-release nitrogen forms. Fast or quick-release nitrogen fertilizers dissolve readily in water and are almost immediately available to plants. They can also be quickly leached out of the root zone in fast-draining sandy soils. Liquid fertilizers can be absorbed through the leaves as well as roots of plants. These have to be applied more frequently than granular types, usually every 2 to 4 weeks. Slow-release fertilizer makes nutrients available to the plant for an extended period of up to several months. While more expensive than conventional fertilizers, they reduce the need for supplemental applications and the likelihood of fertilizer burn. Select a slow-release fertilizer that has at least one half of the total amount of nitrogen listed as water-insoluble nitrogen. And we've run out of time for today's episode of Out in the Garden. Be sure to listen next time, and we hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Anna Dean Silver, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Out in the Garden is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. And please join us next time for a continuation of this book on gardening in the Carolinas, month by month. Thank you.